and that you matter in the next scene. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here. All I needed was a rock that I could lean on. All you needed was something beneath your wings. We might be seeing things from different points of view, but that don't mean a thing. You and I, we were meant to be. I was made for you. You were made for me. So let it happen naturally. Things will work out fine. Just you wait and see. Only one star out, but it was shining bright. So I held you in my arms with all my might. It felt good to be in love again. I didn't want that night to end. But all I needed was a little motivation. All you needed was a light to guide the way. We might disagree until we drive each other crazy. Things should be okay. Monday afternoon, when you caught me staring at you from across the room. There was only one star out that night, but I made a wish for you, and I hope that it comes true. You and I.
This is KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. It's now time for Film at 11. With DK Home.
We're once again with Mona Bowen. Boy, our expert on all things screening.
Let's talk about popular culture and entertainment. Yeah.
So Pluribus is almost over.
Good morning, Carol. Is there anything we could do to cheer you up?
Hey, Carol.
Hey, Carol.
We just want you to be happy.
Rest assured, Carol, we will figure out what makes you different.
Figure it out, why?
So you can join us.
What the f-? If I asked right now, would you give me a hand grenade?
Yes.
What about a bazooka?
Mm-hmm.
What about a tank?
Oh, sure.
This was one of the more anticipated television shows because it came from the mind of the man who made both Better Call Saul and its predecessor Breaking Bad, and probably two of the most prestigious of TV shows, respected both by viewers but also by aficionados of careful television creation. You know, you really had to pay attention to these two shows. But I'm up to episode 8 and I've been really disappointed in the series.
Oh, really? Okay.
Talk me out of it.
Well, I don't know if I can talk you out of it. I did. So episode 7 is the last one that aired. And this is when Manosos comes up from South America,
mm-hmm.
To meet her. And he has that terrible, I don't want to give too much away, but he's one of the 12 people who was not affected by this alien virus.
Yeah. For those that don't know the premise, it is something happens at an observatory, one of those listening stations for the universe, and the scientists receive a code. And the code turns out to be an invasion of the body snatchers kind of a deal. And then everybody in the world, except for these 12 people, suddenly they are good and happy and don't have any issues. And one of the 12 or 13 who is immune to this strange virus is a kind of cynical pop novelist. And the series follows her as she grapples with the inevitable questions like, are these people happier? How do they live? What are some of the secrets that they're keeping from me? And how long will it take for her to give in to don't worry, be happy?
Let's just put it in perspective. There are only 12 people in the whole world not affected by this virus. Mm-hmm. All over the world. It's crazy. And this is Rhea Seehorn is the actress. And I think she's really incredible in this part. I love her. She's got the right amount. I mean, she's very interesting to watch for me. Even in the scene where there's no dialogue, she's just doing crazy stuff like taking a bucket of golf balls up to the top of a high-rise building and blasting out the windows of the building across the way. Mm-hmm. Any of those things. She's just, she's struggling. I don't know why you don't like it. We can get to that. I will say I've been enjoying it. I do feel I am probably not paying the right amount of attention to it in terms of, I'm sure there are a lot of things going on that I am not picking up on, hints and clues. And I think for me, this is a series that's going to reward rewatching in that I'll be able to, now once the first season is over, there's two more episodes, to go back and say, oh, okay, they were foreshadowing that, or, you know, that's what that was about. And she does come into contact with other people who were not affected, and they are reacting in very, very different ways. I just want to say, this invasion of the body snatchers thing, these people have a hive mind. They are now of a hive mind.
That's the important point.
That's the important point. They're a hive mind, and I'm super curious to see what happens, because they have an air of, we care, we want you to be happy, we'll do what you need, we're here to support you. It is very bright and sunshiny. It mostly takes place in the American Southwest, Albuquerque, and it's blazing sunshine for a good part of the time. It's all shiny, happy people, but it is also very disturbing. It's not like a horror movie where there's an air of something. This is all coming from the main character for me, but they've done some interesting things like this. There's this whole thing now. She upsets them very dramatically a couple of episodes ago, and they all vacate the immediate vicinity of her home, the whole city. They all leave.
They just need their own space for a while, which,
right.
Yes. Know, is the 99.99% of the rest of the earth.
Right. And it's very, very funny. So she's there all alone. She's there all alone. But they have set it up there, like, if you need anything, just pick up a phone. She can go to any phone, and she picks up the phone, and she gets this recorded message every single time. And it's really funny. I think the more they do it, and the thing is it frustrating to watch? Yeah, it gets that way. But I feel it's also very funny. The more that it goes on, she has to listen to this whole recorded message before she can make her statement of what she wants or what she needs. And it's this, I just feel like it has such a great idea. We're not cutting away from the message. We are experiencing it with her. So we're experiencing frustration and whatever. I think there's some really good choices being made here. And I also think a lot of this show is a single hander. A lot of it is just Rhea Seehorn doing things. And she's, to me, very interesting and fun to watch. I really like her. She's coming, I don't know if she's coming to terms with what's going on, but...
well, it's a part of a series of recent programs. I've never seen Stranger Things, but I assume it's a part of it. But also the TV series about the people.
Severance.
Adam Scott is in it. Or The Chair Company, I think, might be another. Odd tales that are almost science fiction and almost aren't, but which are also often set in workspaces or comment on work and workspacing. Either they're really good or they're really bad. I can't tell. But what it means is that you really have to pay attention to them, and that's part of it, the signature of the show's, you know, principal writer Vince Gilligan, who comes from the world of the X-Files, and he makes interesting choices. For example, in the most recent episode, the first half is about her. Basically, one whole half of the show is just following the guy from Argentina, driving and walking all the way up to where she is going to be found.
Trying to get there anyway. And him learning English on the way. This is a very long journey, because the last scenes we have of him, and that is how he has learned, like, hi, whatever he's going to say to her. I'm not one of them. I'm, you know, I'm here, like, I got your message or whatever. And I, you know, this, let's be clear. This is not a show for everyone.
It sure isn't. Because I felt that, for example, in the most recent episode, he comes upon an enclave of people living in the forest, and then he has a car. He burns the car up and then continues on foot, and then discovers these trees that have nails poking out of the car.
So this is a type of palm tree that is real.
Uh-huh.
And they are the reason they're in the forest, they're not living there. They're quietly following him. They're watching him the whole time. That's why they turn up there. And that makes sense now. They're trying to tell him, don't do this walk. We'll get you wherever you're going to go. Of course, he doesn't trust them. He doesn't know. He has not had any contact with anybody, mm-hmm. Nor does he. Unlike Carol, our main character, she was talking to these people. She was in contact with these people. They were talking to her. There was communication. They were explaining. She was pushing back, whatever. He refused to talk to anybody or accept anything from them.
Even the food, even the anything.
He's not going to. And the reason he burned the car up was because the only way to get north of where he was going was to go through this. There's no roads, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was not going to accept help. But he also said to them when he burned the car was, nothing on this planet belongs to you. And that's one of the reasons he burned the car.
See, that's interesting, because when I watched the show, it wasn't translated in English, so I wasn't sure what they were talking about.
No. They were saying, we want to help you see all these belongings people left behind because they couldn't carry them anymore. There's other people who are trying to trek through this very treacherous area.
I obviously need to watch that episode again. I think you've made it make more sense to me. But in other words, it seemed like a defeat at the end when she summons her principal helper back to the neighborhood and hugs her.
I don't think she summoned her. She just showed up.
She left a sign which said, please come back.
Oh, please come back. Yes. But I don't think she knew her principal helper was actually going to be the one, but we'll see. It's all very, there's a lot of interesting, I don't know. I like it. I think it's got, I don't know. I don't want to ascribe too much depth to it, but I do think it is, a much more layered than a casual view would allow.
And it's certainly one of the most challenging programs, and it does tax your patience a little bit, but then that could be part of the show's strategy, because her patience is taxed and she's in a world where she doesn't see anybody anymore and has to amuse herself. She's not writing. She has been doing some investigative work to figure out what's going on, to try to subvert the virus. But in any case, it's what channel is it on again?
It's an Apple TV show.
It's an Apple TV show. So
anyway, worth watching for me. You're on the fence.
Yes, I'm on the fence so far. I've invested enough time. I'm going to follow through with it. Another program that I started liking quite a bit, but then became a little bit conventional, is The Last Frontier with Jason Clarke, one of my favorite of contemporary actors.
All right, everyone, circle up. We have a down plane 2 miles south from here. It is used to move inmates around the country. This is going to be their one shot at freedom.
Mr. Remnick, Sidney Schofield, CIA.
Pavlok's out there executing a plan.
Do whatever it takes to secure the perimeter.
Knock, knock.
I've seen what this man is capable of.
I see what's going on. I'm looking for 18 prisoners. And the CIA's looking for one.
Clock's ticking.
What are you not telling me?
He's watching you, Frank. He wants to understand you, see what's important to you, so he can manipulate you.
Hey, Frank, guess who?
And it's about a plane that crashes in far off Alaska, and it's a prisoner plane, so all the people on it are being shipped to prisons and they all escape. And so Jason Clark is the local cop who has to organize a team that goes and fetches these people. But one of them is somebody who's very special, and serious complications have to do with him and a CIA agent woman who is known to him for reasons I can't go into. But this series just recently completed, and you have some thoughts on its ending.
Well, I do. Okay, so you and I were both grabbed from the beginning with this show. I was intrigued. Let's cast is great. It's not just Jason Clark. It's Dominic Cooper, who always turns in good work, Haley Bennett, and a whole bunch of like some semi-familiar faces, but Alfred Woodard, of course, is more than semi-familiar, who I really like. You're a little on the fence about Alfred
Fence. I'm Woodard. Not on the fence.
You don't
I'm off
her.
That fence.
Oh, I like her. But okay. But, you know, be that as it may. I will say I did finish it. I did finish this first season. And I do like these actors quite a bit. Let's put it this way. It starts out with one premise. But of course, in a show like this, nothing is as it seems.
Of course.
There are things going on that only some people know about. And then some people find out about something else going on, blah, 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 blah. I will say they really did Alfred Woodard dirty, as far as I'm concerned. The kind of dialogue they gave this woman is some of the most cliched, horrific, terrible writing. I was stunned. Also, about four episodes in, people start making really stupid decisions where I'm like, why? Why are you doing that?
I agree with you about the writing of all those spy story cliches, for example. But the story, this is a show created by the guy who did The Blacklist, mm-hmm. John Bokenkamp. So if you remember that show, you know that it's one of its prized tropes or gimmicks was constantly surprising you with new things and withholding relationships as far as they can in order to create suspense, or at least faux suspense. And that happens here. So the season ends, but of course we learn that there's more to come, and I don't know how I feel about that. You know, just tell a story and let it go, and then come up with a new story.
Yeah, I think that this could have been probably, I think I would have been much happier with this show. Like, if it goes on more than one more season, I'm not sure I'm going to stick with it. I do want to see some resolution. I mean, there is some things going on now at the end of the first season. Some things are wrapped up, some things are not. I do feel like it's a mystery where the author has withheld some of the most vital information from the beginning.
And then
Poirot at the end pulls that rabbit out of the hat, and you're like, we never told that.
Yeah, it's true. What? Oh, yeah.
No,
I know,
so,
you
I,
really hate those things.
Yeah,
those gimmicks.
Yeah, it's not even, you know, foreshadowed or anything, but I will tentatively stick with it for Jason Clark and some of the other people in it. We'll see. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I don't know. I feel like they could have done this show if they'd done a 10 whatever it was, or 12 episode full complete arc. I would think it would be probably much better to me anyway. But
yeah, I could see where they stopped telling you that one story and go and reverting to another story, because how many escaped criminals do they have to catch before they run out of people? But in any case, that was The Last Frontier, beautifully shot in Alaska, and also, well, I assume Alaska, maybe it was Iceland for all I know. And also it has Classical Gas as the theme song.
Yes, one of my favorites. And it's filmed in Canada for the most part. And that is also another Apple TV show. So
I wanted to talk about one movie that I didn't like as much as I wanted to, and then one that I really liked, which is one of the best movies of the year. But before we get there, is there another show for you right now, or are we...
Well, there is. I'll just mention it briefly. It turned up on Netflix with no fanfare at all. It just showed up in my something new, and
Are you okay? What's going on?
I have lung cancer.
Everything will be okay.
How do you know?
I don't, but we all need someone to tell us, though.
It's called Ripple. I think it dropped last week. There's 8 episodes, the week before last. There's 8 episodes. I mean, it is a series. Assuming Netflix doesn't cancel it the way they do so often, unfortunately. The only two faces that I really, truly recognize, that these are all working actors, but Frankie Faison, who's been around forever. I mean, I think this movie is 100 and something. He's got 159 credits. Like, wow. You will recognize his face. And then a guy named Ian Harding, who was on Pretty Little Liars. But I think he's done some, you know, maybe Christmassy movies, you know, the yearly Christmassy movies. And there's some other familiar faces. It's a very kind of under the radar show.
But I guess so. I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it just showed up, and I'm like, well, let me check what this is. It's the creator is a woman named Michelle Giannusa, and honestly, no clue.
Well, briefly, what is the premise?
Briefly, what the premise is, of course, the name Ripple, okay, it does have a meaning. It centers around a wine bar. I know the cliche, whatever. Anyway, and the comings and goings of the owner and the people around him and the interconnectedness of community and these relationships start to develop. You know, of course, everyone has some kind of thing going on that is crucial or devastating or joyful or whatever, and how they meet up and come together and form this community. It all sounds very cliche, but I have to say, for this time of year, it felt very... is it breaking new ground? No, it's not. But was it kind of heartwarming without being icky, you know? It wasn't icky, sticky. Not everything winds up wrapped up in a nice little bow. There are, you know, people dealing with things that are truly at stake. There's loss, but there's also gain. There's all kinds of things. And I just thought it was a really nice... I mean, I watched it over two and a half nights. I think if you're looking for something that is not cynical right now, if you're looking for something that really shows people who care about each other in mostly real ways, okay, was there one episode that did that thing where two grown-ups did not talk to each other about a thing that was going on in a way that real people would? Mm-hmm. Yes. That I hate that romantic comedy trope, because this, I just want to make this show is not really a romantic comedy, but I really enjoyed it. You know, I just thought it was very a very nice way to spend the time. I enjoyed watching these actors. I liked them. Again, not breaking new ground, but sometimes, as you and I always say, there's a reason I love watching procedurals. I do know what's going to happen. Is that a problem? No, it's not. There's a real comfort food feeling about that. That's why, you know, I go to one of my favorite restaurants. Do I get the same meal every time? Yeah, because I know what I'm going to get and I love it. Right? That's the same thing with this. So, okay. Yeah.
So that's Ripple, and you are recommending it.
I am. Not for everyone, like everything we talk about. Okay, now you tell me about these movies.
The first movie is Wake Up Dead Man, which is the latest Knives Out mystery.
Everyone thinks I did it. I didn't do it.
This goes way beyond normal police work. This is something even I have not experienced. A perfectly impossible crime.
This case is solvable, right?
Well, I'm incapable of not solving a crime. Well, you'll see. It's fun.
And Blanc, played by Daniel Craig. 40 minutes it takes him to show up to solve the crime. The mystery is... like really intricately set up. And yet at the same time, I figured out what was going on. It's a locked room mystery. How did they get into the locked room and things like that? A classic premise for golden age murder mysteries and so forth. And I just didn't think the cast was as interesting as the previous movies. Kind of enjoyed watching it, but I didn't, some of the performers I didn't like, and some of the ones that I did like, I didn't see very much of in it. And I just had ambivalent feelings about it. On the other hand, people are going to see it because it's now a brand and a series. And I think people will know what they're going to get, and they will get it. I just, it didn't confound me like the earlier ones did or surprise me.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm very much looking forward to it. I mean, I think the cast is fantastic. It's not just Daniel Craig. It's Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Jeremy Renner, whatever you may think of him, Kerry Washington, Andrew Scott, Kaylee Spaney, some people who's doing really, Thomas Hayden Church, Jeffrey Wright. Love Jeffrey Wright. I mean, this is a stacked cast.
Yeah.
Really.
Okay. And then, but my favorite, one of my favorite movies of the year, and we can only speak of it briefly, is Blue Moon, which is one of the two new Richard Linklater films. And unlike that one, it's set in the world of theater from the late 40s. And it takes place in one night in Sardi's, famous bar and restaurant, for the opening night, a party for Oklahoma, which was composed by, which was a Rodgers and Hammerstein program. But the main character in this movie is Lawrence Hart, who was his former partner.
We write together for a quarter of a century, and the first show he writes with someone else is gonna be the biggest hit he ever had. Am I bitter,
Larry?
Yes.
We have to work like professionals, Larry.
It's a business, that's all.
What do you think she sees in him? I think she recognizes she's being adored by one of the great appreciators of beauty.
There's no way around that one, is there? When the girl loves the guy with all of her heart and he just doesn't return her feeling? Do you have any idea what that feels like?
Nobody ever loved me that much.
I'll just say this movie is a delight. Beautiful, poignant, great music, a beautiful shot. It's a must-see. But you need to know a little bit about Larry Hart and his relationship with Richard Rodgers.
Well, Rodgers had two very famous writing partners, Lawrence Hart and Oscar Hammerstein. Anyway, so these people, if you know anything about musical theater, these guys were it in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. They really, yeah, so...
Well, one of the narrative threads in the film is that Richard Rodgers was really adept at making melodies, but when in collaboration with Lawrence Hart, who was Cole Porter-ish in his cleverness of lyrics, and he always wanted to do satires and kind of mock other theaters, whereas Richard Rodgers wants to please people. And so the Oklahoma is a crowd pleaser, you know, a happy post-war, let's get back to the earth kind of a love story. That's part of the conflict. It's not like Rodgers has dropped Hart permanently. I mean, they worked with other people all the time, but the Rodgers and Hart was a particular brand, so to speak. It's very sad watching Lawrence Hart, played by Ethan Hawke, coping with what is essentially, in his view, a divorce.
Can I just want to say, just they wrote some of my favorite songs, including My Funny Valentine. Okay. Also, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. They are literally a cornerstone of what would be considered the great American songbook. True. Uh-huh. Old standards. You know, if you were like me, loved Tony Bennett and Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald, you have heard their song.
Absolutely.
They are, yeah. And they're still being played in movies and TV shows today. And they're really just, Have You Met Miss Jones? Just great. Great.
Well, it's definitely worth seeing. I want to advocate it. We're running out of time. So I want to thank, next time we do the show, you can have the floor and talk about Blue Moon if you get a chance to see it. So we've been talking to Mona Bowen and going through some of the more recent shows and movies that we've seen. Some mixed feelings on my part, but you're still intrigued by Pluribus and some of the other things, Last Frontier.
I think this time of year, I'm just looking for, you know,
comfort food.
Comfort food, yeah. It's winter, it's holiday time. Just want comfort food, you know. It's getting dark early, so.
No, it sure is. No, and later, and it stays dark later.
Yep.
Yeah, it's totally discombobulating my biorhythms. All right. It's great talking to you, Mona. We will do this again soon. Okay,
all right,
good.
That sounds great. All right.
Bye.
Doug.
Yes. I'm going to turn it off now. Stop. And Edge was going to hit end. Yeah. Okay. I don't know how to.
Wait, I think I can do it. Let me see.
I know, I got it.
Suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, "Please adore me." And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune into The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your...